Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
One of the biggest challenges we've faced as parents of autistic children is finding people we trust to care for them when we cannot. Whether it be a medical emergency, a sleepover, or simple date night, it's hard to trust others with the care of our children. Today, we will share how this impacts our family and things to consider when deciding whether or not someone is trustworthy.
Welcome to Embracing Autism, a podcast for parents of autistic children seeking advice and support while spreading awareness and acceptance of autism spectrum disorder. I'm Leah.
And I'm Matt.
And each week we will discuss our journey with autism and talk about how to embrace your child's individuality while providing guidance, tips, resources, and sharing our personal stories. This is
Embracing Autism.
Today we're talking about trust, and it's really kind of a tricky topic because it really permeates through a lot of different aspects of your parenting life. For us, it has come up mostly with just childcare. We, in general, have a hard time finding people that we trust enough to be able just to have the skill set and the patience to handle our kids appropriately, basically.
For the most part, if you think about it, outside of like immediate family, we don't really have much of like a network of sorts that's like capable of like taking care of our kids. I mean, we do have like the therapists that they go to for their individual sessions. And obviously we trust all the therapists because like we've been with them for a while and we can see how our girls react to them. But outside of therapy and like family, I find that like our web of people that our kids are like able to stay with is very, very small and limited.
And even when we were initially finding therapists, this was before we moved, our first couple of therapists weren't that great either, because our kids, when they went to therapy, at least the oldest one, she was not responding well to it. We had a feeling it was just that relationship. So there's, again, like lots of factors you have to consider when it comes to autism. And honestly, when it comes to even like neurotypical children, when you entrust a child with another person, you have to make sure that there is some sort of chemistry there, because if the kid hates that person, they're not going to be able to successfully care for them, especially if that kid's going to be putting up a fight. But for us, I think the problem that I struggle with the most in terms of the trust is not so much whether I feel like that adult is capable of taking care of my child, which is a factor, but it's, to me, more critical that they are willing to have patience, because our oldest is really prone to meltdowns. And it's also like there are specific things that you have to know and do in order to, for example, de-escalate a meltdown. When you're entrusting your child to this person, they have to be okay with the fact that we have basically a giant checklist of what you can and can't do with them, whether or not you expose them to dogs. Like, our oldest kid is super scared of dogs, so that would be like a no-no if they have a dog in the house. Or like loud sounds, like if it's somebody whose son plays the drums, we can't have them go over there and babysit our child for a date night, because we know that our kid's going to be triggered the whole time. And we can't tell them, well, your kid can't play the drums. So it's kind of like a catch-22 when it comes to trying to find people who both understand and empathize and are willing to make these sort of sacrifices when really they don't have to. We're asking kind of like a big favor from them.
Even with like people who they see frequently, most days when like our oldest daughter will go to school, I'm praying like, okay, please have like a good day. Hopefully you don't encounter anything that's any type of sensory overload that will trigger any type of meltdown or any type of discomfort. She's been in her school for, I mean, since back in August. So, I mean, we're well into the school year, and each day I'm still thinking like, okay, please have a good day. Please don't encounter anything that's too loud that will irritate you or bother you throughout the day. So I'm just like hoping for like a good day. And this is with like people that, I mean, she's been around since August. So I mean, even then I'm still kind of like on edge where I'm like, I really hope that everything works out and like you can still have like a good day. So I don't know. It's really hard because like, you never really know. You're just kind of like, I don't want to say hoping for the best a little bit, but I mean, you can like prepare as much as possible, like how we like work with our daughter as far as like trying to teach her different situations. But then we almost at some point just kind of have to like push her out into the world a little bit and like sit back and like pray that like she spreads her little wings and like flutters and can like fly a little bit.
Yeah. Cause like the other aspect to that is like you were mentioning, like the teachers, for example, we don't necessarily see what's happening, right? So we have to learn to trust that the communication is also honest. So if we are entrusting our children to somebody to care for them, let's say you and I want to go on a date night, we can't really do that with somebody who we don't trust would tell us the truth of what happened. Because there's some babysitters, for example, that maybe our kid has a meltdown and maybe they're embarrassed because they didn't know how to handle it, or maybe they handled it inappropriately and they don't want us to know. You're not necessarily going to get the full story. So like things like that is where I kind of get worked up a little bit in terms of trying to find an appropriate childcare person. We do rely very heavily on family, but even with family, we have a lot of restrictions. For example, 99% of babysitting that gets done has to be basically at their bedtime where we know that they'll be unconscious. So like we don't even have to worry about it. We like very rarely, unless it's like maybe my mom, will we ever entrust like anybody to having them during the day for an extended period of time. Because not only do they have to deal with the behavioral stuff, but they have to deal with the sensory food stuff. So like if they have to feed them lunch, if they have to feed them dinner, if they have to worry about snacks and all that stuff, our kids have a lot of sensory sensitivities when it comes to feeding. I mean, even we get flustered when it comes to trying to figure out how we're going to feed them. So I can't imagine a caretaker who's not us doing it. And we can't really leave them like a checklist because what our kid is willing to eat that day, she won't necessarily eat the next day. It's very much trial and error. It's all about finding people who are basically as flexible and accommodating as we are. And as parents of autistic kids, we all know, like you guys out there listening, you know how hard it is for us to keep our own patience. It's really a lot harder to get other people to do it too when it's not even their kid.
And it's almost like you would need to find someone who is comfortable, obviously, with special needs or with autism as like a baseline. But then also you'd almost have to have that individual babysit while you're still in the house until they get comfortable with the kids. And then from there, I feel like you might be able to like step out and get like a cheeseburger or something.
But then the problem with that is once you start going into the world of you're finding people who have experience with autism to help take care of your child, yeah, they might be more trustworthy, but that's probably also going to be pricier. So you're probably going to have to pay that person. When my relatives are babysitting, I don't have to pay them. They just, you know, are doing it as a favor. So it really will add up if you have people who have like expertise in autism trying to take care of your child. Some people try to do that with like their RBTs when they have ABA. They will then kind of stay friends with them and then the RBTs will babysit. That's, I think, a really good idea. I just don't know how much they charge. And I just feel like you could charge a lot if you really wanted to because people are kind of desperate.
Because you're kind of cornering the market that you have a specialized skill and there's not many other people that are capable of watching and managing. And then on the flip side, there's not many people that we would feel comfortable with the kids also being with for extended periods of time. It is a very difficult situation. And honestly, we're still trying to figure out like what is a safe bet. I mean, we've been working as far as like developing relationships with people who are in that kind of community. So like we've been speaking a lot to some of the other parents at some of these therapy clinics that we go to for their therapy. So at least like they have kids that are also like on the spectrum and they understand as far as like meltdowns and that. But even so, meltdowns can be like extremely specific to the individual kid of what gets them overloaded. That can also be a challenge as well. But I mean, I'm trying to think of other ways to try and like beat the system a little bit and like find an alternative, but you're extremely limited with your options.
The other thing that we've experienced is because we have two autistic kids, it's even harder because if you have kind of like a one-on-one childcare situation, It's a lot easier to manage. Even if you are raising neurotypical children, typically when a babysitter has to babysit more than one kid, for instance, they will have a harder time with that. So you tend to get older and older people the more children you add, as opposed to like a teenager or something like that. But when it comes to autistic children, pretty much anywhere you go, like if you're going to school and you're getting like a one-on-one aid, it's a one-on-one aid for a reason, because one autistic child alone tends to need a lot of that one-on-one attention. And so with us having two autistic kids, it's even harder, because unless that person is tremendously skilled or has a very good relationship with our children because they've been around for a long time, it's going to be really hard to juggle two different kids. Both are autistic, but they have very different profiles. So like they have very opposite sensory profiles. They have very opposite behavioral profiles. So you can't even use the same technique for both. So that's kind of what we have been running into. And I think the most success that we have had has been relying on family, but that's few and far between since they live several states away.
Right. Because without family, then it's basically us or whoever we can find to help us with that. So definitely challenging. But going back to some of our other episodes, as far as like working on building like your community, if you're able to like build like your tribe and or community, whatever you want to use, and you're able to have your kids around these potential adults who hopefully they can build some type of rapport with them and they know how to interact and work with your kids should they have any type of meltdown or any type of sensory overload or anything like that.
Yeah. So basically what we've tried to do is just build those networks and connections. So like our kids go to Sunday school every Sunday and they have people there that are not professionals in any way when it comes to autism or special needs, but they're empathetic to special needs. And so we have built some rapport with them, and we do feel like we can trust our child with them because they've showed us that they're very empathetic to autism and autism symptoms and all sorts of autism-related things. We feel safe there being able to one day a week drop our kid off for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and have them take care of our child. And we have not had any issues. So far, we've never been called for any sort of meltdown behavior or anything. They put in accommodations. They'll give earmuffs. They'll check in. They even, if they feel like it's an off day, we'll have like a one-on-one, like a teenager buddy come up and help that child. But we have not had an issue there. So what we've been trying to do is trying to seek out these sorts of connections in our community, whether it be in the church, whether it be people in the school system that maybe they're looking for like an after school gig, especially in the summer. There's people who are kind of like part timers that in the summer they might be looking for some extra work. And we've been trying to find it that way. We've also put together a social network in our local Facebook community. So I put together a local Facebook autism community. And in those local communities, you can often make connections online too, because RBTs or people with experience will be in those groups. And you can ask if there's anybody there available for childcare. And that to me is something that I find a little more comforting, because again, it's somebody who has experience with autism. So that's a couple of the things that we have tried. But again, our kind of go-to is basically relying on our family and going at night.
You did raise a good question as far as like for like Sunday school, because they love going to Sunday school because we do it every week and that's just a routine. But we have been adding other things in their routine of places that they go. So it does give them a bit of interaction as well as gives us time that we can spend together. So one other thing is like they have a special needs ballet. Every Thursday night, they go to that for like 45 minutes. And it's super helpful. They have a buddy that they assign to each of the kids. And it's all special needs. So everyone knows how to engage with them. And it's a relatively small group. Not everyone's overwhelmed. And they have, since they have a buddy, they can help each individual child. And so that's a 45-minute little social interaction. Our kids love it because, I mean, they're really, really into dancing and ballet. So they get to wear their little tutus and go dancing. And then for like Lee and I, it gives us 45 minutes if we wanted to go get like a cheeseburger or something.
I was like, don't pause because people think you're implying something else.
Well, I was going to say Subway, but I know that you hate Subway.
Yeah, I don't like foot longs.
Well, we're not going to go to Subway.
I'm going to stop.
While you're ahead.
Oh, gosh. Okay, but back to the subject. So one of the things that we've also done is we've put them into, like Matt was saying, more extracurriculars. So in addition to the ballet, we also do in like aquatic therapeutic swimming lessons that we put them in. And so they do that like on the weekends. And not only are we doing a good thing by helping them decrease their drowning rate by giving them swimming skills and also exposure to some sensory aversions, because our youngest has that to work on. So it becomes therapeutic, but also it gives us that time for a break. So if we can't find childcare formally, it's kind of like a workaround of putting your kid in a place that is trustworthy in the sense that these are therapists who are licensed. At least for the program we're in, the people who are running the swimming lessons, for example, they're actually OTs, PTs, they're actually therapists who are working with them. So we try to put them with people that we feel like totally understand disability and are able to work with them. And then during those times, we can kind of take a little bit of a break for, yeah, like lunch or a snack or whatever it may be.
Yeah. So we're always looking for like new opportunities because I think us getting them out into society, trying new things, it will open their world a little bit to like all the different opportunities that they can have and different exciting things they can try. I would really love to try and get them into like horseback riding or something like outdoorsy. I think that'd be great.
Except for their phobias.
Well, I was going to say, but also that takes on like all sorts of other risks because like they're very much like elopement. So like when they're on the horse, I think like they'll be good, but like heaven forbid they like get on the ground and yeah, they might be like off.
But now that you mentioned the elopement, that's another issue that we've had with trusting people to take care of our kids. We have certain family members that are more educated in autism than others. A lot of it is just like us doing all the talking and whether or not they absorb it. But basically what we've found is like with some relatives, we feel really comfortable with being like, okay, yeah, you can take them outside to the playground, for example. But for other relatives or other people who have basically volunteered to take care of our kids, I feel really uncomfortable and probably would not allow them to do it unsupervised because if the playground is not fenced in, or if they decide, oh, we're done with the playground, let's go do something over here, and it's not like a pre-approved location, some people don't really understand what that means to an autistic kid. They don't really understand that if you change that routine at the last minute, it could cause a meltdown, it can trigger elopement if it's not a fenced-in playground or like a pre-approved location where we've approved it for specific reasons like elopement risk or familiarity. Or maybe there's like sensory overload and we're like, do not go to that place. Sometimes people don't take us seriously and they don't take the autism seriously and they think we might be exaggerating and they'll be like, oh, they'll be fine. You guys are just kind of helicopter parenting. You're kind of babying them. We're going to go do it anyway. And then, of course, it triggers our kid. Our kid does elope and they do go into a meltdown. So that's another area of like the trust cycle that we kind of struggle navigating too, is how to be tough and push for what we feel is appropriate for our kids without really straining those relationships.
Yeah, it is always hard. I mean, I'm just thinking about like the like times that people are thinking like, oh, you're just still not figuring out the whole parenting thing. Oh, like everything is fine. Like we can do whatever with like the kids. And we're like just sitting there, we're like, this would be absolutely train wreck if we tried to do whatever the activity is. We know our kids, we know what challenges they have, we know what sensory struggles they are dealing with. And it's just interesting to see how quick people, either they don't understand the dynamics to autism fully, or they haven't been around like our kids enough. And they just think like, oh, this is fine. Kids, this is what kids do, or this is where what you do with kids. And it's like, most of the time when we go to the playground, I'm already thinking like, okay, how can we find a way to exit the playground? Because I mean, obviously we'll stay there for like an hour or whatever, depending on time limits. But I always have in my mind, like, okay, how can we make sure we have a smooth transition out of the playground? Because if I just suddenly decide like, oh, we're leaving, like, let's go, it will be a total meltdown. I mean, there's no way around that. So I'm always trying to think of like, okay, how can we do a nice transition where the kids feel that they are capable or in control of the situation, that they don't resort to a meltdown? If we go with someone who doesn't have a care in the world, it will just be an absolute train wreck or dumpster fire.
Well, God forbid they use an actual countdown or a actual timer because that's what a lot of people do. And our eldest child is extremely averse to those. Like that will send her, she will definitely elope if you do that. And she will have a complete meltdown.
A small little example, even her special education teacher, when she was taking a standardized test, she informed us like she does not like stop signs because on the standardized test, it would have like a stop sign that would pop up and let her know like, oh, okay, you're done. That set her off. She did not like the stop sign. And then even when they were doing like a like paper test, there was like a little stop sign at the bottom. She was like, she did not like that stop sign. I was like, okay, this is good to know moving forward because we haven't really encountered anything like that. But I mean, again, until you experience it and you know and you build some type of like rapport, like you don't really know what challenges and struggles each individual kid has until it's either brought to your attention or you kind of stumble upon it yourself. So, yeah.
So that's like, you know, just the typical struggles of being a parent to autistic kids is like you really can't, for the most part, have those date nights or have those moments to yourself as a couple, or even if you are a single parent and you just want to be able to watch a movie. Like, it's really hard to do if you don't have that trustworthy network. We are working really hard on building those networks. So whether it's just the one or two people in our family that we trust, we know we can trust them fully. Or if it's maybe building relationships within our community, whether that be at church, whether that be other parents, people who understand, it might not even be parents of autistic kids, but maybe they're an aunt to an autistic kid, or maybe their kid has a different special need and they can empathize with that. So like just making any sort of connection with somebody who is at least willing to listen to you and not think or jump to the conclusion that you're just a helicopter parent and you're exaggerating. Because that to me has been very dangerous when people do that and make that assumption, because not taking us seriously can literally result in like our child potentially getting into significant danger.
Right. It's the you don't know what you don't know kind of thing, like because you're just kind of like not aware or oblivious to what the circumstances are, but you have no knowledge of what is there. So depending on your area, I mean, there are programs that have special needs activities and such. And I mean, we're still relatively new to our area, so we're still always on the lookout for like new opportunities for activities that like our kids can get in. I mean, if anyone has any good ones that they've encountered, let us know.
We have found in our local community a facility that does do like a monthly respite night. And in doing some digging, I have looked around some surrounding counties. And it does seem like other counties have that. So that's another thing that I would recommend is to take a look in your counties. Usually these are run, in my experience, by local churches, or they might be by like local schools that are like private schools. And what they will typically do is hold like a once a month or like once a quarter respite night where you can drop off your kid for like 2 or 3 hours. Usually it's free and they will take care of your kid. They'll provide the kid with food, entertainment, things like that. And you can go and take those 3 hours or 2 hours to go and either take a nap or catch up on chores or have a little date or whatever it is that you need to do. And like ever since we discovered that, like that has been amazing for us.
Yeah, we get like a day date and get lunch and just it's quiet.
We can actually see each other because we don't have to date in the dark.
Well, I was gonna say, but also we can have like a like adult conversation, which like what is that nowadays? Like
we can listen to our own music in the car. It doesn't have to be some sort of like Bluey theme song.
Sing along. Yeah. So it's just you can have like a conversation and just be yourself a little bit more and not be like parent mode. So
yeah.
No, it's definitely a good activity to try and look into. So I mean, I would always, keep on the lookout for new things that your communities have. Each thing that we find, we try and try it with the kids just to see how they like it, if they're up for it. We've had good success with the different activities that we've introduced them to, and it kind of broadens their horizon a little bit to new experience as well. So we're all for it.
And if you can't find it, there's two things that you can do. One is, again, I recommend the Facebook groups because that's where you find them. So if there's a local autism Facebook group, ask around in there and see if anybody knows of any of these types of organizations. If there doesn't happen to be any whatsoever, then go to wherever you have the strongest connection, whether that's like your church or local YMCA or whatever it may be, wherever you have some sort of connection or some sort of relationship with the people who run things. And make a suggestion like we did with our local church. We made a suggestion to start like a special needs parent support group, and they were really receptive to it. So if you cannot find some of these things, you can try to find the connections to then make the suggestion and start something like that in your local community.
Yeah, I mean, you raise a good point because like most of the time we're not aware of like what other people in the community need. So if we are one voice just mentioning something, someone else might kind of run with that idea and be like, oh yeah, I know like three other families who are also in like a similar boat and like could benefit from this as well. So you don't actually know until you start reaching out or finding these groups who is in a similar situation to you. And therefore you can collaborate or kind of like work together to get something going.
I will say, though, the hardest part of this, I think, is more when things are spontaneous with things like babysitting or date night. Like those are things that are not really urgent. And so you can kind of plan them out in advance. But the hardest part for us has been more like with the unpredictable situations. For example, a week or so ago, we got a flat tire on our way having to pick up our kids. There was absolutely nobody we could call at that time to pick them up for us. So like we just had to deal with it. And deal with the time we had to call the facility and say we were going to be late and there was nothing we could do. And luckily, somebody there was able to stay with them longer until we could get there. So there's certain situations like that where we still haven't quite worked out what we'll be able to do. Or like right now that I'm expecting this baby, what, in a month or so? Yeah. If I have any sort of like medical emergency, if my mom wasn't here at the moment, we would really have no one to go to or who's going to take care of our kids while I'm in the hospital and I'm in labor, like things like that.
Back to like when, I mean, we had to like take a break from the podcast and you were super, super sick. When we needed to check into the like ER for what, like 48 hours or whatever it was basically like me with the kids in the car driving up, like, I mean, I felt so bad, like kind of like dumping you out at like the ER as you're like
shoved me out of the car.
I mean, basically, I felt so terrible because like I like was with the kids and I didn't want to bring them into the ER. So it was like me pulling up to the ER and being like, okay, like good luck. And you're just like kind of like, I don't know, not stumbling, but like kind of like crouched over, like walking into the ER because I mean, you pretty much feel like death. And then like, I mean, obviously we're communicating through the phone, but it's like you're basically completely alone in like the hospital getting like IVs constantly. And like I'm with the kids. So it's not like I can really like go and like visit and spend time like helping you. I'm with the kids making sure they're good. So yeah, it's sometimes it's a whirlwind of sorts.
So that's something that we can definitely relate to and empathize with when it comes to autism parenting. Sometimes at the end of the day, you're left juggling all the balls on your own. And really, we can't hope that somebody's going to come and save the day because it's not necessarily realistically going to happen. So all we can really do is try to build those connections, try to put some of those backup systems into place and kind of hope for the best. So that's what we've been working on personally. That's what we feel like we are confident enough to recommend at the time, because right now that's what's working for us, except for these emergency situations, which is a lot harder to deal with. But at least for non-emergent type of things, building those community connections, I think is probably the most important thing that you can do at the time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because at least you have some type of like safety net. I mean, obviously, like emergencies, like you're kind of just trying to survive, get by. But like if you're able to build some type of like connection, at least like in the times that are less spontaneous and less emergency, like you can have like a outlet where you can get lunch. It's always good to do. But yeah, I would definitely look into what your community offers and see what's out there.
So what do you guys think? Do you struggle with finding trustworthy people to care for your autistic child, especially if you have more than one like we do? Does something hold you back from building or developing that trust? Do you feel like you just absolutely cannot trust somebody else to take care of them and you just are not comfortable with it at all? If you found any other workarounds from the ones that we've mentioned, what are some of those workarounds? Like, we'd like to know because we're still testing ours out and totally open to new ones. You can go ahead and let us know by either sharing your thoughts in the comments on YouTube or Facebook at Autism Wish, or you can continue the conversation with us on our private Embracing Autism community. Before we go, don't forget, become a member today at autismwish.org for exclusive access to that private Embracing Autism community. We have support groups in there that are voice, video chat. They're drop in, drop out. You can basically chat whenever you'd like, as well as a lot of other resources like printables and state-by-state resources and a ton more. Thanks for hanging out, everybody, and we will check you out next week.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been the audio from the Embracing Autism Podcast live stream series. Please check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/@autismwish to catch these shows live. Otherwise, stick around next week for our next episode.
This is Embracing Autism.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.